episode 58, and today I'm going to cover some information about autism. Thank you for joining me today, and I hope you're having a happy new year so far. If you haven't done so already, please find me on one of the social media sites. I'm on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Link up with me there, and you will see any new posts that I put on there or any updates to the podcast that come up. I tend to use Instagram the most, so if you aren't sure which one to pick, I would honestly suggest that one. Although I try to keep up with all of them, it doesn't always happen right away. For today's show, I wanted to get into some autism topics. First, I will go over some of the signs of autism in kids, starting with infants. Then, I will go over a research study that looks at a specific type of parent-mediated intervention for infants who are at risk for autism. Before I go over the signs of autism, let me preface this by saying that not all kids who have autism will display these signs. Also, some kids may do some of these things, but that doesn't automatically mean that they have autism. And the things that I list today are not all of the possible signs of autism out there. These are just some behaviors, reactions, actions, and things to keep an eye out for. And if you notice these things popping up, you should consider mentioning it to your child's pediatrician. One thing I will say is that many pediatricians' offices are now screening for autism at well-child visits. They often happen at 9 and 18-month visits, and then the 2-year and 3-year checkups. This is a great thing that they're doing. However, the screening is often a quick checklist that parents fill out. I think this can be great for parents to fill out, but I fear that one problem with it could be that maybe parents think in the back of their mind that their child is showing some signs of autism, but they're not quite ready to hear it or admit it yet. Denial is such a big thing, and no one wants to get any news about their child that isn't seen as positive. So parents in this situation could end up marking the questionnaire in a way that might mask what they know their child is doing or not doing. This can happen with any assessment that is based on parents' input, of course, and we have the right to answer these in whatever way we want, or not at all, even. The reason I worry about it is that if a child is showing signs of autism, we would ideally like to catch it as early as possible so we can start getting any appropriate interventions going with the child and the family. I know I have gone over some of the red flags for autism before, but today I really wanted to narrow down some of the more common signs that I've seen and try to give some more detailed examples and explanations that can happen or become apparent during different age ranges. Okay, so what are some potential signs of autism in infants? For this discussion, I'm talking about infants up to 12 months in this first part. With infants, I would look for them to make eye contact with you. This is a developmental skill that happens very early on, one of the earliest outward observable signs I can think of. Infants often enjoy being held and cuddled. This includes times when they are being fed and times when they are just being held. However, a potential sign of autism, or a red flag as we often say, is an infant who becomes distressed when you're holding them and trying to cradle them close to you, especially for feedings. Breastfeeding can be difficult for them because it requires very close contact with the mom. If they are fussy with breastfeeding, parents may switch to bottle feeding and find they are less fussy, but still seem or act uncomfortable when you try to hold them during the bottle feedings. These feedings can become stressful for both the parent and the infant, which doesn't set a good tone for mealtimes long term. Beyond the contact piece of feeding is tactile and oral sensitivity in their mouth and face areas. You might see them gag or choke frequently when feeding. Another possible sign and reason why feedings might be difficult is if the infant has reflux or constipation or just seems to be extra gassy. GI symptoms can be common in kids with autism, and these signs can often be seen in infancy. Sometimes people will just think they're colicky, and that might be the case too. But sometimes the colicky symptoms can be explained later on as early signs of autism, gastrointestinal issues, and or sensory issues. Another possible sign or red flag in infants is head lag. I did one entire show on head lag back a few months ago, episode 41. So you can go back to that one for all the details on that milestone. But as a brief review, this is where the infant is lying on their back and you hold both of their arms and gently, slowly pull them up towards a sitting position. Their head will lag, which means it will hang back slightly or a lot at first. Then when they are around 4 months old, you will start to see their head stay more in line with their body. It won't hang back as much, and they will start to lift their head up as to help lean forward or up off the floor. Infants older than 5 or 6 months, and even toddlers, actually, that still have this head lag may be at risk for having autism. Another possible sign is infants that don't make comfort sounds or cooing sounds, or many sounds other than crying, like laughing. These language skills start in the first couple of months, and they should be starting to coo, especially when their parent is talking to them around 2 to 4 months of age, and babbling by 6 months of age. Again, these age ranges are generalizations, so don't hold me to the exact ages for each milestone we talk about today. I'm just giving you these as grossly general guidelines for you to have. If they don't smile at you when you smile at them, which this usually happens around 2 to 4 months, this could be a potential sign as well. Now, if the infant has issues with their vision, this milestone could be affected by that, of course. So this is why I say it could be an early sign of autism, but it is not a guaranteed sign, because something like vision could be preventing them from smiling at you if they can't see you to know that you are smiling at them. Once you know that their vision is normal, then you can determine whether or not their social eye contact and generally socializing with you are appropriate. This is a little harder to measure, but infants tend to be social beings. So if they are not showing an interest in you as their parent or caregiver in general, I consider that a potential early sign as well. Finally, speaking of vision, infants that light gaze, or where they tend to look at light sources, whether it's the lights in the ceiling, lamps, or windows in the house, could indicate an early sign of autism. Now, many infants will catch sight of a ceiling fan and stare at it for a brief moment in time. This can be perfectly okay, but I'm talking more about those infants that prefer to look at the ceiling fans or stare at lights or windows rather than looking at people's faces when you're in front of them. This falls into a visual category for me, similar to the eye contact area, but in this case, we are considering either issues with being able to see due to vision deficits versus potential visual sensory processing issues. The sensory aspect is where they might either show sensitivity to visual stimuli, meaning they avoid looking at you or making eye contact because the stimulation is too much for them visually to handle, or the opposite, where they prefer to look at exciting things like spinning ceiling fans and bright lights because it is more interesting to them than your face. I think there could be another side of that where they avoid the stimulation of looking at your face or your eyes by looking at lights or ceiling fans instead, even if they don't necessarily prefer that type of visual stimulation. Like I said, it is not unlike many infants to notice ceiling fans moving, or not moving actually, but if they will only ever look at those or look for those and really never look at your face, then I start to get concerned. Now, with all that being said, for infants, not many people usually recognize the signs in their babies. As an early intervention provider, I can tell you that I have seen these signs in infants, and they later received a diagnosis of autism. I have seen some of these signs in babies less than 1 month of age, so it is possible to see them basically from the earliest age, although it doesn't usually get recognized that early by most people. It is heartbreaking to see these signs in infants at such an early age, especially when their parents don't recognize it. Not an easy position to be in, but that's getting into a whole different topic. So now for getting into the toddler years, if the signs weren't recognized in the infant time frame, or if there were some signs but maybe not enough to be convincing, the signs tend to become even more obvious during the toddler years. This is a way more common age for people to recognize the signs are there and start to look for answers from their pediatrician or from early intervention programs. Most often, I would say that the signs that get recognized in toddlers were present when they were infants, but either not causing any concerns or issues, or not enough of an issue to really take notice. Or they were pretty obvious, but the parents may have been dealing with that thing called denial again. Either way, when they're toddlers, those same signs continue to carry over, but often become more obvious during this time. This is largely because toddlers are able to do more things than infants overall. So, when they aren't doing more than they were before, it usually gets noticed. For example, talking. Depending on the severity of autism, of course, but often the toddler will not progress with language. Or if they do, it might be more of an echo or only repeating sounds or words rather than necessarily coming up with words on their own. The toddlers may be able to get their needs met by crying, fussing, or having a tantrum, or by taking your hand and pulling you to whatever it is they want in the house. But they may not be able to tell you what they want by using words or sounds that are close to the words for the items. When they're trying to get your attention for things, this is not done using eye contact a lot of times. In social situations, we use eye contact to communicate with people. We look at their face and eyes to try and figure out what they are thinking and to generally watch their expressions. For example, when we want to ask something of people, we often look at them to make sure they're paying attention to us before we ask. One potential sign of autism, this eye contact and generally looking at parents' faces for this communication purpose, may be missing. There are plenty of kids with autism that will make eye contact or regard your face. However, the way it's done may not be for the purpose of communicating or reading your expression. It will often be random and possibly with a blank expression on their face, although, of course, that is not always the case. This kind of gets back to the social smiling issue as well. A lot of parents get confused because they might see their child smile and think, well, then they don't have autism. But that is not necessarily the case. There are plenty of kids with autism that do smile, of course, and some of them will smile at you when you smile at them first. Not always, however. The other piece of this is not just in smiling, but with other facial expressions. With kids who are typically developing, they will start to imitate when you make funny faces at them. They will do them back to you, or at least try. For kids with autism, this may not happen. When you make a funny face at them, they might look at you but not seem to notice the funny face you are making. Or they might just look away and not seem to notice you at all. Or any other combination of things. This is a big issue for many kids with autism, that they don't recognize social cues from others. Now, being their parents, since they are with you the most, they might start to pick up to some degree on some of your cues or actions that you have done with them repetitively over time. Another possible sign is where the child has a tantrum or becomes very upset very quickly, almost instantaneously, and sometimes it's for no apparent reason. The child might become very upset and inconsolable to the extreme. They may not seem to be comforted when you try to console them or hug them. There may be situations where it just seemed like they were playing with a toy, and the next thing you know, they're having a fit. As far as you can tell, nothing happened. On the other side of this, if they're trying to play with something and another child or person also starts playing with the same thing, they might become upset with this or just leave the area and do something else instead. You have probably heard about one of the signs being that kids with autism line up their toys. They might like to line up their cars in a row or in a circle formation or something like that. If you mess up one of the cars, this could be extremely upsetting for them, to the point where the meltdown happens for longer than you would expect a toddler meltdown to happen. However, there are kids with autism that don't get upset by this, and they might just choose another car from the pile and replace the one you moved, for example. However, that being said, there are kids without autism that could respond in these same ways. They might also have tendencies to line up toys it isn't necessarily a guaranteed sign of autism, the lining up toys. One of the big differences, though, is that the kids without autism will likely communicate verbally with you in some way. They might say no or cry, but also try to tell you that they don't like that you're messing up their game by using words. They might stop you before you have a chance to mess up their creation because they see it coming before you even do it. Another possible difference might be that if they do become upset by something you've done to their toys, the kids without autism will most likely be able to recover from being upset more quickly than the kids with autism. So if the child has an extreme reaction, then takes a very long time to calm down and continue playing again afterwards, this could be a sign to me. You can tell that they have a specific way of playing with the toys, or they have their idea of how things are going to go. And if they don't go that way, the child with autism could become very upset. This is why sometimes it seemed like nothing had even happened, and they just became upset for no apparent reason. In those cases, I'm guessing there was something that happened when they were playing that just didn't go the way they expected or that they wanted it to go, and this was upsetting to them. It could be the smallest thing and something that we may never figure out about the activity that upset them. This type of thing goes on throughout their day, too. Meaning that any activity that is different than usual or out of the routine could be upsetting just because it's different. Another possible sign is picky eating. Having a very limited diet is quite common in kids with autism. There are many kids who will only eat a handful of foods. If a new food is presented, that food will often be rejected, ignored, or thrown down or pushed away. Just the sight of a food that is different than what they like to eat could ruin the entire meal for them. It could seem like they have no interest in food at all, or that they really love one particular food item. Things like sweet rolls, goldfish crackers, or chicken nuggets are really common things. I also see a lot of kids with autism who love to drink or chug milk. Milk is a very filling drink, so it could be one way for them to feel full without having to try and deal with eating foods and getting messy or chewing or whatever it is about foods that isn't pleasing to them. This gets us into the sensory stuff more. As infants, these issues are usually there, but sometimes they're not as obvious. Those subtle issues become more obvious during the toddler years also. Issues with clothing, not wanting to wear certain types of clothes or wear clothes at all. More issues with food that includes the sensory aspects of foods like textures, messiness, smells, tastes, the way it looks. Jumping or spinning frequently, or the opposite where they seem like they don't want to move much at all and might resist having their diaper change because of the change in their head position. Sleep issues are common in kids with autism. A lot of times they don't take naps consistently or at all. Also, sleeping at night can be intermittent. They might take a long time to fall asleep at the beginning of the night, maybe even like an hour or two to get to sleep. Then they might sleep the rest of the night, but some kids will only sleep for 2 to 3 hours, then be awake again the rest of the night. Sleep issues can look different for any child, but they are extremely common in kids with autism. GI issues with reflux, gas, constipation, and diarrhea, if present as infants, will often continue during this age as well. Reflux may not be as obvious since they are older now, but should definitely be considered as a possibility. Another thing I see a lot are frequent ear infections, and even if they don't get actual infections, they will often have fluid in their ears every time they go to the doctor. One thing to consider here, and this goes for all kids, not just kids with autism, if a child is having reflux, everything in their throat could be inflamed from the reflux irritating it. When their throat is swollen or inflamed, this can cause the area around their ears to become smaller or compressed as well. Therefore, their ears may not be able to drain the fluid as usual that is in there, which could cause the fluid to sit in their ear and just stay there. Again, even if they aren't getting ear infections, the fluid will always be there when the doctor checks them. Pretty much always, if not always. Moving beyond the toddler years now, first off, I would say that most kids are diagnosed with autism by the time they're around 4 years old now. I know this is not always the case, but people are getting better at recognizing the signs and bringing their kids in for evaluations more than they did before. However, there are some kids who have autism that it doesn't get recognized or diagnosed until later, if at all. I would guess this happens more with kids who are considered high functioning, or what is now called level one in the autism diagnosis. In these cases, a lot of times the kids will be able to communicate verbally or expressively in some way with people and can generally manage to get through their day. However, social cues might continue to be difficult for them to recognize or interpret. The signs could be more subtle the older the kids get, but in some cases the signs get more obvious. Social skills are a big one that can become more obvious with age. It can be difficult for them to read other people's body language or even to understand the tone or inflection in things people say to them. This can make it difficult for these kids into adulthood to respond in what might be considered a socially appropriate way with other people. Conversations can be difficult if they are having trouble figuring out if the person they are talking to is mad, happy, sad, or any other emotion. This difficulty can affect their ability to build relationships with other people and to make or keep friends. Okay, I'm going to change pace now and talk about the research study for today. The study was published in the Journal of Child Psychology and Psychiatry in 2017. The study is titled Randomized Trial of a Parent-Mediated Intervention for Infants at High Risk for Autism, Longitudinal Outcomes to Age 3 Years. The research was done in London, and they studied 54 infants, ages 9 to 14 months, who have a family risk of autism, meaning that an older sibling in their family has been diagnosed with autism. The infants in this study have not been diagnosed with autism or any other type of developmental delay or diagnosis. There were two groups in the study, one group which received the intervention and the other group that did not. The infants were assessed at 9 months of age to establish a baseline, then again at 15 months after the intervention was done, then again at 27 and 39 months for longer-term follow-ups. The intervention was a video feedback system that is designed to help parents understand and adapt to their infant's individual communication style. The purpose of this feedback is supposed to help them promote their infant's optimal social and communicative development. The intervention consisted of a therapist using video feedback to help parents respond to their baby's communication and improve their attention, language development, and social engagement. The things that the researchers were looking at specifically with these video recordings were things like interpreting the infant's behavior and recognizing their intentions, enhancing sensitive responding, emotional attunement, and patterns of verbal and nonverbal interaction with their parents. The intervention was done in their own homes. Several different measures were used during the study to assess behaviors and development at each of the four ages. The Autism Observation Scale for infants was used at the 9 and 15 months times to assess for early autism-related behaviors. Some of the things they looked at were social reciprocity and imitation, and motor, attention, and sensory behaviors. Then the Autism Diagnostic Observation Schedule, second edition, was used at the 27 and 39-month follow-up times. This is completed by a trained experimenter and is a structured assessment of the interactions between the experimenter and the child. They were specifically looking at social affect and rigid and repetitive behaviors with this assessment. After 5 months, families who received video therapy showed improvements in infant engagement, attention, and social behavior. This suggests that very early intervention for at-risk infants might reduce the amount of autism-related symptoms into their second and third year of life. This is good, what they could determine up to 24 months after the end of the intervention. The study doesn't get into much detail about the specifics of the video intervention. From what I can tell, the therapists watch the videos and give the parents feedback on how and when to respond to their infant's social cues and overall behaviors. This suggests to me that the way parents respond to their infants and toddlers may have and probably does have a huge impact on their infant's development. When you think about it in this way, it isn't really surprising to me that they would find this to be true in their study. After all, parents are the ones with their infants and toddlers the most, and who should have the most influence on their development. It is nice to have some additional scientific research to back this up, though. I hope that therapists listening to this will keep this in mind when working with their families and children with special needs of any kind, really, not just autism. Without the parents' involvement, the child may not make as much progress as they would if the parents are involved in therapies. Parents are the ones who will be able to carry out the suggestions on a daily basis and an ongoing basis as things naturally come up in their lives and during their natural routines. And at the same time, we need parents to recognize this as well and remember that you are the ultimate key to your child's development. We professionals can help add to the system and guide you along the way, but you are the biggest player in their life. Well, I think this is a good place to end for today. I would also like to say thank you to those of you who have purchased my book, Play With Your Food, How to Get Your Toddler to Eat is the name of it. I hope you're enjoying it and getting something out of it that is helpful in your life. The book is available on Amazon for about $6.50. A reasonable amount for a short book. It's more of a guideline type book for people looking to get some additional strategies and information about eating issues, especially related to sensory processing difficulties in infants and toddlers. Thank you so much for listening and have a great day.